Welcome to the next installment of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra's podcast. It's a different voice this time. I'm Margot Stedman. I am the Education and Community Engagement Director here at the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. And it is March, and we're celebrating women in music. And so we are doing a women-focused podcast. And I am here with a symphony patron and longtime friend of the symphony and friend to me as well, Libby Parker. Libby, give us a little bit about your background before we start.
Thanks, Margot. I'm so glad to be here. My background is varied, but I was in professional opera when I was younger, a lifetime ago. And since I moved to Rockford 10 years ago, I became a reviewer for the symphony orchestra for a couple of years, maybe two and a half, for the Rockford Register Star. And I'm also a journalist. I still participate in a couple of choirs. And I sang once with the Mendelssohn Chorale, now the Nielsen Chorus. And I really, really am a fan of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, thank you. Well, let's just dive in. You've been thinking, I know you and I have had offline conversations about women in music and their influence in the background, and that's kind of what led us to sit down and talk about it on the record. And so I'm excited. So for you, who comes to mind when you think of famous composers in general?
Well, the Bs, right? Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Bartok, Mendelssohn, Handel, and the list goes on.
But there aren't any women in that group, I noticed.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Margot. When we discussed the idea of this podcast, I immediately thought of Nannerl Mozart. Now, most people have heard of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, but not as many people are aware that Wolfie had a sister, and she was an extremely talented sister. Maria Anna, who was called Marianne and nicknamed Nannerl, was 4 years older than her brother, and she was also a child prodigy on the keyboard. Their father, Leopold, was a court musician, and he took both of the children on tour through most of Europe, billing them as Wunderkinder. There are reviews actually praising Nannerl, and she was often billed first. Hmm. But when she turned 18 years old and was eligible to marry, her father told her to stay home, and her career ended, but not her involvement in music. She composed many works. Her brother praised one in 1770 in a letter, one of the many that they exchanged while they were alive. "My dear sister, I am in awe that you can compose so well. In a word, the song you wrote is beautiful."
So one of our time's most beloved composers, still Mozart, loved her music. Mm. Why haven't we heard it?
Well, unfortunately, none has survived. There may be undiscovered pieces in a trunk somewhere. They may turn up at the Antiques Roadshow or in a garage sale.
But something?
It would be wonderful. But none has surfaced.
Unfortunate. So going back to you, when you were a child, were you exposed to classical music?
Oh, absolutely.
And do you recall hearing any classical compositions written by women when you were young?
No. My parents exposed us children to all kinds of music with an emphasis on classical works. My mother played piano. My father did too, but he played mostly pop music. And she'd have the radio on during the day, listening to classical music station. When I was young, I remember asking her, "Why are all these composers men? Did women ever write music?" I don't recall her answer. It was probably something like, "There aren't that many female composers."
So this is something you've thought about for a long time.
Which, oh, absolutely.
Is what I love. So there are many women composers today, and the symphony's, of course, been focusing on them all season.
Yes.
And most of them, all of them except one, are living that we've done this season. So what about the past? Is there a lot of evidence today to show that women were composing music, and was it performed?
Well, yes. There really is. There's been a lot of research, and one of the earliest and most celebrated female musicians is the medieval artist Hildegard von Bingen. Some people have heard of her in our audience, I know. She entered a Benedictine convent at the age of 14 in the 1100s. She had an incredible brain. When you read about her, it is phenomenal. She wrote theological, botanical, and medicinal texts, as well as letters, liturgical songs, and poems. She went on, she became an abbess, and she founded her own convent. The songs were performed by and for the nuns at their various services throughout the day. And do you know, there are more surviving charts by Hildegard than by any other composer, male or female, from the entire Middle Ages.
That's great.
And she's one of the few known composers to have written both the music and the words. You can hear her works regularly in churches and concerts today.
That's great. So we're in the Middle Ages. How far back has your research on this subject taken you?
Well, how about the year 810?
Wow.
That is when the Byzantine Greek musician Cassia was born. She, too, was born into a wealthy family like Hildegard and received a sophisticated education before she entered a convent and eventually became an abbess who founded her own convent. More than 50 of her liturgical works survive today, and many are sung regularly, especially Christmas. Hmm. She is one of the earliest female composers from whom we have manuscripts today.
Wow, that's neat. I'd never heard of her.
I hadn't either until I did my research. Another composer from the 8th century was an Armenian, and boy, I know I'm going to wreck pronouncing her name, Khosrovidukt. She had a rather awful early life. Mm. Her brother was abducted by Muslim Arabs, and she, who was of royal lineage, was taken to a fortress where she lived in isolation for 20 years, and where she wrote poems and hymns. One of her hymns written to honor her brother, who was killed for reclaiming his Christian faith, is still used by the Armenian church in services. That's from the 8th century.
This is fascinating. So you've mentioned two women so far who became nuns and then composed music. What about other women? Were there any that wrote secular music?
Yes, there were, but women in past ages had limited opportunities within Western art music, especially composition. Back in the 4th century, women were not allowed to compose or sing for the church. Hmm. They were under orders to be silent, but that basically meant that their voices within the organization could not be heard. Mm-hmm. They could and did make music in their own separate convents. And I found it interesting that in the Renaissance, women were expected to learn to play feminine instruments that would not contort their faces or their bodies. This left women with mostly keyboard instruments like the harpsichord. The lute and viol were also acceptable during the Renaissance and Baroque eras, and later the harp and guitar. This made orchestras and other ensembles mostly all male.
What I find interesting about that is when you think guitar nowadays, you think, you know, the hunky teenage boy with the guitar. You don't think of it as a feminine instrument so much anymore.
No.
I mean, of course there are women that play guitars, but you always think of teenage boys and guitars. Or I usually think of teenage boys and guitars. But it was for women.
Right. And love then that. Here's another woman with a fabulous name. As an example, Maddalena Mezzari detta Casulana Vincentina, better known as Maddalena Casulana. She was born in Italy in 1544, the late Renaissance period, and women still had to live their humble, demure, and pious lives, but some from well-to-do families rebelled a little, and including Maddalena, who pursued academic studies in Florence. She was a talented lutenist and vocalist and pursued a career in music, where she sang and taught in salons and academies that accepted women. She was the first woman to publish her own music in the form of a four-part madrigal.
Wow.
Yeah, a folio of her madrigals was actually published.
Yep.
And in the early Baroque era, when male composers like Monteverdi and Cavalieri were composing operas, at least one woman was as well. Francesca Caccini grew up and worked in Florence as a musician for the famous Medici family, following in the footsteps of her musician father, Giulio Caccini. She was the first woman to compose opera and the most well-paid musician in the court at the height of her career in the 1620s.
Wow.
This was truly a special talent and privilege.
Yeah. The most well-paid musician.
Yes.
That's
yep.
Amazing. Are all women who paved the way for the time when women in wealthy families were less held back and could pursue music when they wished.
True. And as we move to the 1700s, we're nearing the height of the Baroque era. And this brings up Marianne Martinez. She was born in 1744, died in 1812.
Okay.
She was an Austrian composer, active and widely esteemed during the age of Mozart. She was the creator of the only symphony composed by a woman during the classical period in music.
Wow.
So
another one I've never heard of, too.
She was a fascinating person. She also played duets with Mozart. And I understand from my reading that she was an inspiration to Mozart's sister, Nannerl.
Wow.
Her story is fascinating. It's well worth reading about. I'll tease you with one interesting detail. She lived in an apartment complex, really just a big, big building. And on the lower floor was an empress. And on the middle floors were some people of influence. And then so on. And then you get up to the attic. She took singing lessons from a very famous voice teacher and keyboard lessons from a starving young artist who lived in the cold attic and was trying to make his way in a music career. His name was Joseph Haydn.
they all, you know, knew each other.
I know. So we don't think of that, do we?
Interesting. Right.
We just don't. We think everyone sort of lived in a bubble.
And they're all interacting and making music together. It's really so beautiful. So there are many well-known female musicians and composers and arrangers of folk and pop music who've participated in protest movements with their music throughout the last half of the 20th century. And of course, as we said earlier, the RSO's 1920 season were celebrating women and composers, also overlapping with the celebration of women's suffrage and the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, granting women the right to vote. And there's been exciting things going on in town in Rockford celebrating that, too.
Absolutely.
So are there any female classical composers who were active in the suffrage movement? Is there a connection there?
Yes, definitely. Ethel Smith was perhaps the most well-known of England's opera composers.
Hmm.
And she also was an avid supporter of the suffrage movement. She wrote the very first opera by a female composer to be performed at New York City's Metropolitan Opera.
Which is interesting. We're performing a piece this month by Missy Mazzulli, who was the first woman commissioned by the Metropolitan Opera.
So I'm really looking forward to
hearing it. All connected.
Yes, yes.
I love it.
So she was so turned on by the speeches of Emmeline Pankhurst, who was the founder of the British women's suffrage movement. And so she quit what she was doing in music, and she spent 2 years joining in the cause. But she wrote some pieces for the cause, and one of them titled Laggard Dawn, and the other is The March of the Women. And they were written in 1911 and premiered by a chorus of suffragettes at a fundraising rally at the Albert Hall in London on March 23rd, 1911.
Wow.
The latter tune, The March of the Women, was arranged for mixed voices and union singing, and it became the battle cry of the suffrage movement. You can hear many versions on YouTube. Another passionate woman suffrage participant was pianist and composer Helen Hopkirk. Although she was a Scot, she joined the movement in America. She was seen riding in an open car in a suffragette parade.
Mm.
And then Amy Beach, who was also featured on the RSO page, was the first American woman to premiere a symphony.
Mm-hmm.
She was a strong believer that female composers had just as much, if not more, to share than their male counterparts. Beach's successful contributions to both society and music became an emblem for the women's suffrage movement.
So with all of these interesting stories about the early women musicians and all the things that they've done, why do you think their works haven't been inserted into mainstream repertoire of major orchestras and opera houses?
You know, I can only answer your question by saying that research into finding all of these forgotten musicians only began in earnest during the 1970s, when the feminist movement began to delve into the very question we're asking. Did women write music in earliest times? How about later? Where is that music now? Recording artists are catching up with a volume of manuscripts that have been unearthed.
Hmm.
As we've learned, women did compose large works, but not as many as men, simply because they didn't hold the prestigious positions that offered the opportunities for them to be performed.
And it makes you wonder, too, how much more was going on that just is lost.
I know that we so much more must be lost.
Yeah. So what have you learned in your research for this podcast that you didn't really know before?
Oh.
How do you wrap it up?
How much time do you have? Wow, a lot. If anyone wants to see a sampling of the wealth of female composers throughout history, just go to www.oxfordmusiconline.com/page/women composers by time period. Just in the period from, say, 1960 until now. I counted over 400 names. And these are all published artists. And, of course, not all the world's women are even on that listing.
That's great, though.
I know.
That's wonderful.
I applaud Maestro Larsen. I really do, for including symphonic compositions by women composers in this season's classic series. It is so important that large organizations perform more works by women so that they can become part of the repertoire of orchestras worldwide. For the upcoming March 28th RSO concert, Maestro Larsen chose a work by Missy Mazzoli, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. a celebrated contemporary artist, whose work Symphonia for Orbiting Spheres will be featured on the March 28th RSO concert. She's one of the two first women to be commissioned by the Metropolitan Opera, and she's a performing pianist and keyboardist. She often performs with a band that she founded in 2008, Victoire. She's currently a composer in residence with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and she's giving a leg up to contemporary composers. Listen to this that she said earlier, last year, as a matter of fact. "My main goal as composer in residence with the CSO is to bring Chicago audiences something totally new. There are so many composers who are brilliant, but have yet to be celebrated by a major American symphony orchestra. So I feel like this is my opportunity to showcase them. In particular, I'm focusing on young female composers who have not yet been celebrated by a major orchestra. Composers who have had success in Europe and abroad, but who have not been heard over here as much."
We've learned through your research that there were many female composers and musicians as far back as we can go in history, and many more today. So where is their music today?
I know from my research that women in the past were kept at home, having babies and tending to the household. They were not allowed to play women's roles in theater, as we know, not allowed to sing women's parts in music. And their compositions were only allowed amateur status, with performances in salons and private residences. As restrictions were lifted through the ages, women musicians have blossomed and began to be better known in their local spheres of influence and through the royal courts as well as churches. Research in the last 50 years, since the 1970s, mm-hmm. has brought their names and music to light again, and little by little, performances of women's music are gaining traction with major orchestras. Nannerl Mozart's music did not survive for us to hear it today, but her memory is being preserved by actress and musician Sylvia Milo in a one-woman show she created back in 2013, I believe, and it's called The Other Mozart. With no set, but she's wearing this dress. It's a fabulous pink dress with the bustier and the whole business. But it has a huge skirt, and it fills the stage area. And it's festooned with letters that Nannerl and Wolfie wrote to each other throughout their lives. Milo has transformed herself into this frustrated musician, whose immense talent was quashed at 18. There's a HuffPost review that reads of her show, "Milo has crafted a version of Nannerl's experience with heartbreaking compassion for the artist she might have been."
Well, I have learned so much. Almost all women composers that I had never heard of before, which is what I so appreciate, is that you found these women that are, you know, just still hidden from us. And
yes.
I'm excited that we have an organization in town that's celebrating it, that we can be part of this national celebration for women getting the right to vote. And I just appreciate so much all the research you did in putting this together to share this with us.
Well, I'm so glad the idea came up and that I was able to help out. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.